You are listening to
Worldwide Engineering.
Worldwide Engineering.
Worldwide Engineering.
Worldwide Engineering.
Hello, Worldwide Engineers. Welcome to this podcast. My name is Leon, and it is my pleasure to introduce you today to my guest, Julia. Julia is a TEDx speaker. She is an author. She's a researcher, and she's an aerospace engineering student at the University of Turin in Italy. Julia has been studying the feasibility of human missions to Mars for 4 years and is currently working on two international research projects about Mars colonization. On this podcast, Julia and I got to talk about what it would take humanity to settle a space colony on the red planet. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Let me know what you thought by sending me a DM on Instagram, worldwide_engineering, or on my personal account, Leon Aboud. Enjoy the show. I'll see you on the other side. Julia, thank you so much for coming today. It's honestly awesome to have you on the podcast today. I'm glad we made this happen.
Me too.
So for those of you who don't know a lot about you, do you mind giving us a little bit of a background of who is Julia?
Sure. So I'm a student of aerospace engineering at the Polytechnic University of Turin in Italy. I'm in fact Italian, I'm 21 years old. Other than engineering, I love writing, and in fact I'm a writer. I've wrote two books, which are two novels. One is science fiction, and it is a story based on Mars, but I may talk about it later probably. And the other is more centered around aviation. Other than that, last year I was nominated a national coordinator for the Moon Village Association, which is a global association that fosters the future human missions to the moon. And also right now I'm working on two research programs centered around Mars, and in particular cosmic radiations and the sustainability of future missions to Mars.
Wow, that's what really surprised me is that as a 21-year-old, you've accomplished a lot in so little time. I mean, you're an author, you're a TEDx speaker, you've worked on research papers, you know, I've seen a bit, you've met astronauts and all those things. Like, good for you. And at what point did you actually get into the whole space and aerospace industry? How old were you?
So I discovered the aerospace world when I was like 15 years old, and I discovered the Samantha Cristoforetti, who is the first Italian woman to fly to the International Space Station, because before her, I had no idea that there was a space program at all. I had no idea about the existence of the International Space Station, for example. And so like that was when everything started, and I got passionate about aerospace engineering and the whole astronautics world, and in particular, the whole process of how to become an astronaut and how space missions are designed and come into existence, basically. And so that was when I decided that I was going to study aerospace engineering.
Okay, that's cool. Before we go into the whole, like, the more like technical stuff, I'd like to know, what are you currently working on in terms of your research? What is it based on?
Okay, so first of all, it's part of an online internship program for summer that I found online really accidentally, and I decided to take part because I'm one of those kind of person who just when they find an occasion, I just have to take part. I really can't resist. And so now we are working on writing two papers, two research papers, and in particular, in one of them, I'm studying the cosmic radiation environment on the surface of Mars, and I'm trying to realize how to mitigate radiations so that the equivalent amount of radiation doses that an astronaut receives, it's like not too much. I mean, they can still like get it and be healthy, if that makes sense. And so we're doing many calculations, and basically it turns out that probably regolith, you know, what we find on the surface of Mars is probably the best material for that. But maybe I'll get more deeply into this later. While the other research, it's more kind of a discussion where we analyze the sustainable technology that we've been worked on so far, And then we are doing some policy recommendations for future missions to space, and in particular to Mars, in order to make them sustainable. Because we argue that sustainability is important to make so that space missions can be long-term and that we can continue to explore space.
Mm-hmm. About the radiation thing, I find that super interesting. What are some of the solutions that you have to make to lower radiation levels that the astronaut is subject to?
Well, there are many things that have to be kept in considerations, because there are some materials that may shield radiations, like, for example, aluminium. But then the problem is that when the radiation hits that material, like, secondary radiations are created, which are maybe even more harmful, and so the problem is not solved. Mm-hmm. So it's all like finding the best compromise, I guess, to make so that the whole equivalent dose is below a certain limit that has been calculated for astronauts on missions to Mars. However, it's been found that, in fact, the best material is probably regolith, which is, you know, that kind of sand that there is on the surface of Mars. So probably bases on the surface will probably be built with walls made of regolith, which will need to have a certain thickness so that, you know, the radiation dose that arrives is below the limit. Or the bases can be underground, so in caves and lava tubes. And that's probably the best solution, because, I mean, under the surface, you can even set up an inflatable module, which is a lot quicker and easy to set up, you know, instead of building an entire base out of regolith. So I think probably caves will be the best solutions for the first missions. Then we don't know with what technology might be developed later.
I'm so glad you mentioned the lava tube. Because just last week on Thursday, I had a conference with Spacebit. I don't know if you heard of them. They're the first UK mission to the moon. And I had a conversation with them, just like us right now. And we had an audience watching. And the whole premise of their mission is to sending legged rovers to the moon to explore lava tubes. And the goal of doing that is that in the future, lava tubes would be the first home for human settlements, because the, you know, the thickness of the surface of the lava tubes with the outside surface, just this provides good defense against radiation and all those things. And which I didn't know, by the way, on the moon there's a lot of radiation levels, which is not something I had thought about. So on the moon there's also, did they found lava tubes? Is that something present on the Mars surface?
Yeah, they're present both on the Mars surface and on the moon surface. By the way, I think the moon is actually still like protected from the magnetic field of the Earth. I'm not sure, but I think like the amount of radiation on Mars is still worse than on the moon. But by the way, yes, there are lava tubes and caves on Mars, and mostly in the northern region, and in particular in the Tarsis region near Olympus Mons. I don't know if you have idea of a Mars map, but basically near Olympus Mons, that's where there is this volcanic region with the caves and all. So that might be good.
Okay, that's interesting. So what is it that got you into this whole Mars thing? What is it that fascinates you the most about Mars?
So everything started when in 2016, I took part in an European engineering contest with the project of a Mars base. And I was 17 years old, and like before I started this contest, I knew absolutely nothing about Mars. And like I started from zero. That's where everything started. Mm-hmm. And then I took part in this contest and I won the semifinals, and I went to the finals in Belgium, which was super crazy. I had to present my project in front of an international jury of experts. And I've learned so much about Mars during this whole experience that like at the end of that contest, I really didn't know what to do with that whole amount of knowledge about Mars and living on Mars. And so like that was also more or less the moment when I decided that I was still going to study Mars and to master this topic. And like my goal, my dream will be that of becoming an expert, an actual expert of missions to Mars. So that's why I also decided to get involved with this research. I mean, the more I learn, the better.
And that even led you to actually writing a book about Mars, Ad Martin 12.
Yeah. Well, that happened at the end of the contest where, in fact, I didn't know what to do with this whole amount of knowledge. And since I loved writing, I decided, hey, how about I apply all that knowledge to a novel or an actual story? I said, I have a project of a Mars base. I could put people actually living inside there, like, you know, fantasizing. And so that's how the whole story began, because I also started thinking, hey, but what if I was born there? What if I was there? And so that's how I got the idea of the first human beings ever born on planet Mars. So because, in fact, the protagonists of the stories are teenagers who were born and grown up on Mars. And, you know, they're humans, so they are teenagers just like anybody else, but they are on Mars, which is pretty dangerous if you break the rules, so everything becomes more interesting. So that's more or less what the whole novel is about. And I try to base it on scientific studies and make it as accurate as possible so that people can read it and enjoy the story and still learn something about missions to Mars.
How hard was it writing a book that's based on science fiction but also based on physical facts and physical phenomenons?
I mean, it was half writing and half studying. I have, oh wait, I have it here actually. This entire notebook of calculations and you know, things like that.
Wow.
Where I was studying how to make everything make sense, basically, scientifically sense. But it was pretty fun, actually.
So would you write another novel?
Yeah, then I've read another novel, which, however, is like different. And it's a story of a girl who's training to become a military pilot. And that's because since I'm studying aerospace engineering here in Italy, it's very, how can I say, based on aeronautics. So we study airplanes a lot more than space, at this stage at least. So I've also grown a passion for military airplanes. And so that's how the whole story began, basically. I had to apply my technical knowledge about airplanes into another novel, because of course, you know. And so that's how Calopsia came into existence. But that's different. It's actually more of a deep story with a love story and things like that. But they are airplanes, so.
Okay. That's cool. That's amazing. So I'm curious, if right now you were given the choice, let's say Elon Musk tonight sent you a DM on Instagram and told you, hey, Julia, do we have a spot on our Mars mission in a few years? We're looking for someone to fill the spot. Would you say yes?
I mean, yeah, of course.
You would. I mean, the first thing you told me is that your last passion was to go to Mars, right?
I took some time to think because you said in a few years, and actually going to Mars requires years and years and years of training. So I was thinking, okay, I'm going to say yes, but only if I can train properly for that, because I'm not crazy.
But then it brings to the question, what about Mars is so appealing to human imagination? You know, we know what Mars is. We know it's a red planet it's a planet that's rusted and that it offers very harsh environment for survival. But what is it about us that really crave this? We have this sense of wanting to know what is out there, this sense of wanting to colonize somewhere else. Like, what is it about Mars specifically?
Mars is the only planet we can land on currently. Because if you think about it, what choices do we have? Mercury, it's half frozen and half burnt. And that wouldn't be, you know, too nice. Then there's Venus, where the atmosphere is so thick that maybe we reach the surface, but then we die within a few minutes. I mean, I know we've sent a spacecraft there and like literally survived for a few minutes. So we're going to Mars just because it's close, relatively, and it's rocky, and it's not too hard to, you know, set there a settlement compared to the other possibilities that we have. Because otherwise, we could aim to the moons of Jupiter or Saturn, but mm-hmm. they are so far. I mean, the trip would take like years, like 10 years or maybe a little bit less, and that would be too much. So that's why we're going to Mars, basically. And it's just a starting point, because however, sooner or later, we will have to go deeper into the solar system. At one point, maybe we will also have to leave the solar system at all. And Mars is just, you know, the first place where we're going to learn how to live in space. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, these are just our first steps outside our cradle.
That was good. That was good. Because when you think about it, also Mars is close enough, but also far enough for us to, like, once we're settled on Mars, you're settled on Mars. You know, there's no going back. For example, the moon, we've sent humans and we've brought them back. But Mars is far enough that, like, once we have people there, that's it. We have, there's humans on Mars, you know?
But wait, don't think that they're going to send humans to Mars and leave them there. Like, they will come back.
Why though? What's the point?
Keeping humans on Mars alive is extremely expensive. So that wouldn't make sense. So they're going to come back. This is certain. I'm sure of it.
So then wouldn't it be more... On an engineering side, wouldn't make more sense to develop a colony or to create technologies that would allow humans to create a colony and become independent on Mars? And every few years, we send them, you know, new supplies with new people. That's the impression I had.
That's definitely what is going to happen. I was talking about the first missions. The first missions to Mars will be just like the missions of that are currently on the International Space Station, you know? You go, you stay there a bit, and then you come back. And I've heard the first missions to Mars entirely will be something around 2 or maybe 3 years, counting going and coming back and staying a bit. And these are the first missions, because there is the whole setting up part. Then when we will have developed enough technology to be very, very, very autonomous on the surface, then probably the first people will go to stay. But I think that will be not too close as a future. Not too near future, if that makes sense. Sorry for my English.
No, it makes total sense. I'm sure you know that NASA recently sent a new rover to Mars, the Perseverance rover, with the goal of actually just looking for life on the red planet. You know, it's equipped with very sensitive sensors and, how do you call them, like tools to find past traces of life. What do you think it's going to find up there?
Oh God, I don't know. I mean, I know it's looking for very simple life organisms from the past, because there are these theories that Mars has probably been not too different than the Earth in the past, with flowing water, which is the main source of life, you know? So they're basically searching life, because based on that, we may understand more about our own evolution and our own origin and the origin of life on Earth. But it's really cool.
I hope so. I mean,
because, like, the landing site of this rover is near a crater, which is the Jezero crater. I don't know if the pronunciation is right. I'm sorry. Which is thought to have been a lake in the past. So they may actually find old tracks of water and old tracks of life, and that's so cool.
That's so cool. That would be fascinating. And I mean, the rover is landing in February next year, so it's pretty soon when you think about it. So by a year and a half, 2 years, we'll receive the first data sent over from the rover.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun because sometimes my friends ask me, what do you think about aliens' life in the universe? And I'm always like, well, maybe we find it next year on Mars. Who knows? And you're always like, what? Yeah.
I'd like to know your opinion on something that's very controversial, actually. And it's something I personally have to deal with very often on Instagram, because I often post content about space, which is a very trendy topic lately. And every time I do that, I actually just an hour before us jumping on this call, I posted something about SpaceX sending another 54 Starlink satellites to space. And you always see those people in the comment section starting a debate over if it's worth it investing in space, or if it's actually worth using those resources and investing them on Earth. And there's a very valid debate on both sides of the field. So I'm curious, where do you stand on this?
I stand with the idea that investing in space means investing in Earth and in our future. Because it's hard for many people to realize how much benefits to our society and to the Earth space exploration has brought, just because it's really indirect. It's not direct, you know, the results that we get from space research. But for example, the whole technology that we've used in the past to get us to space, we're now using it in our everyday life. Like, we have satellites that give us the GPS, that gives us internet connection, television broadcastings, and you know, the whole like Earth observation technology that saves lives from natural disasters. I'm just mentioning some examples. Or there are so many technological comebacks in the medical field, as well as in so many other fields. Like, the whole workings of our smartphones, for example, are a result of the technology that has been developed for space missions. Because, you see, the particular thing about space is that it is such an extreme environment that it inevitably pushes technology forward. So we are going to Mars, and to go there and keep humans alive there, which is a place where there is hardly anything, is a technological challenge. So if we manage to make it, then we may be able to apply that same technology to Earth and sustainably help people and countries in need here. And this is just, you know, an example of the whole question, which is actually so huge to talk about. And then also, if we want to talk about some more broad answer on the matter, if we want to ensure the human survival for thousands or millions of years, hopefully it will be necessary to become an interplanetary species, and going to the moon or going to Mars are just the first steps in this so long and necessary journey. Then we will also maybe need to become interstellar species, because unfortunately stars don't live forever and we are made to live near stars. So, but that's really far into the future. It's nearly science fiction at this point. But it's always cool to mention it.
It is. I absolutely love what you said earlier. And that's actually the first time I hear this, that I want to repeat it. Sp- space is so extreme that it forces us to push technology forward. And when you think about it, that's absolutely true. You know, we are a species of necessity. We only do things out of necessity. You know, if we're comfortable here on Earth, that won't really push us to push technology forward, to go leaps and bounds. But the fact that space is so hard, it literally forces us to rethink how we do things. I'm glad you said that. So what are your thoughts on companies like, actually just like Blue Origin? Because I know right now all the hype and the media attention and people's attention is on SpaceX. But yesterday, actually, I was actually reading about Jeff Bezos's Blue Origin, and they're actually doing, they have the same level of success as SpaceX, but they're just very low key about it.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not following much what private companies are doing because I'm not like a huge fan. Not because I don't esteem what they do, but just because I don't follow the whole world much. But my take on the matter is that there is this competition, I guess, among these private companies. And I think that's fine because it pushes technology advancement more quickly. So that's what we want, right? So that can't be bad.
No, it can't. I agree. So Julia, where can people find your book?
So Bot at Martem 12 and Calopsia are on Amazon. And just be careful because they are both in Italian and in English. So make sure you know what language you want to take it. And you can find them also on my website, which is www.astrojulia.com. And there is section books, and I put all the links there so that you don't make confusion. But yeah, you should make it.
Perfect. And if people have any question, what's the best place they can send you a DM or follow you to stay up to date with everything you're doing?
Yeah, I'm very active on Instagram. I always try to answer to everyone with questions, so no problem with sending me a direct message.
Perfect. Astra Julia. Julia, it was really good having you on this podcast. I really enjoyed the conversation, and thank you for making the time to do this.
Thank you.